Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The leaders of the demons thought it unwise to hold the tail, the inauspicious portion of the snake. Instead, they wanted to hold the front, which had been taken by the personality of Godhead and the demigods, because that portion was auspicious and glorious. Thus the demons, on the plea that they were all highly advanced students of Vedic knowledge and were all famous for their birth and activities, protested that they wanted to hold the front of the snake. Purport. The demons thought that the front of the snake was auspicious and that catching hold of that portion would be more chivalrous. Moreover, the daityas must always do the opposite of the demigods. That is their nature. We have actually seen this in relation to our Krishna consciousness movement. We are advocating cow protection and encouraging people to drink more milk and eat palatable preparations made of milk. But the demons, just to protest such proposals, are claiming that they are advanced in scientific knowledge, as described here by the words Svajaya Shruta Sampanaha. They say that according to their scientific way, they have discovered that milk is dangerous and that the beef obtained by killing cows is very nutritious. This difference of opinion will always continue. Indeed, it has existed since days of yore. Millions of years ago, there was the same competition. The demons, as a result of their so-called Vedic study, preferred to hold the side of the snake near the mouth. The Supreme Personality of Godhead thought it wise to catch hold of the dangerous part of the snake and allow the demons to hold the tail, which was not dangerous. But because of competitive desire, the demons thought it wise to hold the snake near the mouth. If the demigods were going to drink poison, the demons would resolve, why should we not share the poison and die gloriously by drinking it? In regard to the words Svajaya Shruta Sampanaha Prakyata Janma Karma Bhihi, another question may be raised. If one is actually educated in Vedic knowledge, is famous for performing prescribed activities, and has been born in a great aristocratic family, why should he be called a demon? The answer is that one may be highly educated and may have been born in an aristocratic family, but if he is godless, if he does not listen to the instructions of God, then he is a demon. There are many examples in history of men like Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, and Kamsa, who were well educated, but who were born in aristocratic families and who were very powerful and chivalrous in fighting, but who, because of deriding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were called rakshasas or demons. One may be very well educated, but if he has no sense of Krishna consciousness, no obedience to the Supreme Lord, he is a demon. That is described by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 15. Namam duskritino mudha prapadjante naratamaha mayaya parita jnana asurang pavam ashritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Asurang bhavam refers to not accepting the existence of God or the transcendental instructions of the Personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Gita clearly consists of transcendental instructions imparted directly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But asuras, instead of accepting these instructions directly, make commentaries according to their own whimsical ways and mislead everyone without profit even for themselves. One should therefore be very careful of demoniac, godless persons. According to the words of Lord Krishna, even if a godless demon is very well educated, he must be considered Mutha, Naratama, and Mayaya, Pritagya. Tanaichandaitya patayo mahapurusha cheshtitam nagrinimo vayam puchum aherangam mamangalam sajaya shruta sampanaha prakyata janma karma bhihi. The leaders of the demons thought it unwise to hold the tail, the inauspicious portion of the snake. Instead, they wanted to hold the front, which had been taken by the personality of Godhead and the demigods, because that portion was auspicious and glorious. Thus the demons, on the plea that they were all highly advanced students of Vedic knowledge and were all famous for their birth and activities, protested that they wanted to hold the front of the snake. Om Agyanata Marandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vanshakalpa Tribhyascham Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Once when I was in Mayapur, I took part in a play which was exactly this topic, Churning the Ocean. It was directed by Bhakti Marg Swami. Some of you may know that he's very good at putting on plays, and he's very meticulous. He was passing me on the path near the Gurukul, and he asked me, "Oh, we're doing a play, would you like to be involved?" So I said, "Okay, that's fine." And I was thinking, well, a play means an hour rehearsal the day before and maybe half an hour on the day. Then you do the play. I mean, that's what I'm used to. But it wasn't like this. Actually, he recruited many Gurukul students to be part of this play. So every day for a week, 2 or 3 hours rehearsal. And while that was going on, suddenly all these large wooden cases arrived from Canada. And inside, beautiful props. We had a snake that was probably about 10 meters long. It was first class. So we put on the play in the auditorium, and it was a big success, and so much so that the audience made us do the play again. So we did the play straight afterwards. And all that endeavor, it was worthwhile, because ever since that time, I've never managed to get the same buzz out of doing a play as what this play was. I guess it's whatever endeavor you put in, you get out at the end. So it's very nice. He's a very good play organizer. So I was thinking, well, what shall I say on this topic? And I was reflecting this pastime. It can be seen from many angles of vision. I mean, if one is not schooled in Bhakti philosophy, then it's simply a pastime. It's something entertaining. There are demons on one side, demigods on the other, and they're fighting. And then you pick a side. Who do you want to win? Oh, I want the demons to win. Oh, I want the demigods. And it's all very interesting. And then all these fabulous creations come out of the ocean. But if we consider from the philosophical point of view, then we can think of the messages, what is to be learned from this pastime. And there's a lot to be learned. For a start, we see how the demigods, they were successful. So what is the reason for that? It's because they have devotion. Bhajanti tumam bhakcha mai te teshu chapyaham samaham sarvabhuteshu nasti name dvesho stinapriha. Although Krishna says, "I am impartial," still he also says, "But I favor my devotee." So because the demigods, although they are self-interested, their motive for approaching the Lord was not pure. Their motive was they wanted to get back the heavenly planets. The beginning of this pastime, it's described how Durvasa Muni, he saw Indra walking by on his elephant, so he took his garland and he offered it to Indra. And Indra was very dismissive. He took the garland and he gave it to his elephant, who then dropped the garland and stamped on it. It was not a very respectful thing to do. Negligence. So because of that disrespect to the garland and to Durvasa Muni, the demigods, they lost control of the heavenly planets. The demons took control. So then as it said in the Bhagavad Gita, Arto Artarti Jigyasu Gyani Cha Bharatarshava. Four types of person surrender to the Lord. Those that are in distressed, those that desire wealth, which means the demigods, desiring their kingdom back. Gyani, one who is in knowledge, and Jigyasu, one who is inquisitive, they surrender to the Lord. So out of motive, the demigods, they approached Kshiro Takashaya Vishnu, and they offered prayers, and then the Lord gave them instructions. He said, well, make a truce. Make a truce with the demons, and jointly you should churn the ocean, and that will solve your problem. So we see that, as it is said in the Vedas, there are two classes of men. Vishnu Bhakta Smito Daiva Asuras Tad Viparyayaha. It's a very simple categorization. It's not three or four or five. It's simply two classes of people. Devotees and everyone else. Tad Viparyaya means everyone else. So that means the Asuras. Now this is very good psychology because it's very helpful for spiritual advancement. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Asatsanga Tyagi Vaishnavachar. The behavior of the Vaishnava is to avoid the association of non-devotees. If we associate only with devotees and we avoid the association of non-devotees, then we make spiritual advancement. Of course, we also preach, but that means not taking their association, it means giving our association. So this is a very beneficial categorization. It's a duality. Of course, we should transcend dualities. Guna dosha drishir doshaha. It is said in the 11th canto that to even see qualities and faults is itself a fault. This is referring to a advanced vision, a monistic vision, which includes devotional service of the Lord, because monism is included within devotional service. That vision is how we are meant to see. E balo e manda e shabha brahm. To consider good and bad in this world is itself a fault. It's illusion. It is mano dharma. It is simply the activities of the mind. The mind will say, this is good, this is bad. And by surrendering to this way of thinking, all we do is keep ourselves in duality. As long as we have attachments and aversions, then we have to stay in this world. But the higher vision is Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Asochati Nakankshati. That to no longer lament, no longer to desire, and to be situated on a platform which is called the Brahma Buddha platform, which for Vaishnav means that platform in which we become one with the Lord but remain different from the Lord and engage in loving devotional service. But before we reach this platform, it is necessary to discriminate. So as I mentioned, this discrimination is very beneficial for spiritual life. We should be careful who is demon, who is devotee. We should understand, devotee means one surrenders to Krishna and one's life is auspicious. In this pastime, the demigods are victorious. Not because they're demigods, but because they surrender to Krishna. That is the actual reason. I mean, in modern psychology, there are so many other ways that personality is analyzed. One way they do it is called trait psychology. They have so many questions. They give multiple choice questions. And then they give lots of people to fill in and give different answers. And maybe they ask 500 questions. So you tick boxes. Do you like this? Do you not like this? Do you like going out? Do you like to stay at home? Are you talkative? Are you not talkative? Do you like being alone? All this kind of stuff. And then they analyze. And they get the computer. And the computer starts to do some statistics. And then they start to work things out. They go, well, people who said yes to that question, they also said yes to that question. They said yes to that question. And people who said no to that, they said no to this. And then after all their analysis, they finally come to a conclusion. Actually, there are only three kind of personalities, three-dimensional. I don't even remember what they were. One of them was some people are extroverted, some people are introverted. I think another one was some people are compassionate and some are selfish. But anyway, the conclusion is, after asking all these questions, they come up with a sort of belief that this is what makes up people. There's only really three kind of dimensions that people have, and they can be on one scale or the other. So you can represent everyone as some point in three-dimensional space. Oh, this person's extroverted, they're also kind, and they're also this and that. So that's, I mean, it has some, obviously it has some reality. It's not like completely untrue, but for making spiritual advancement, it's completely useless. It's far better off just to understand that what is a demon and what is a devotee. And the characteristics are given in the, is it the 15th chapter? Anyway, 15th or 16th chapter. And it's quite interesting that, as Prabhupada's pointing out, that to be a demon doesn't mean that you're not educated. Now, the demons he mentions in this purport, they were Vedic demons. There's a difference between Vedic and devotional. It takes a while to dawn on people sometimes. It's there in the Bhagavad Gita. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna. The Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. Oh, Arjuna, please become transcendental to that. Or yam imam prishpitam vacham pravadantya vipashtitaha veda vadarata partha nanya dastiti vadanaha. That those people who are not devotees, they are attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas, and they think there is nothing more than simply Vedic sacrifice for elevation to the higher planets. That is the. So this is an example of atheism. It's actually in the purport, Prabhupada mentions Hiranyakashipu. So he was Vedic, very Vedic, well educated, knew the philosophy, and he worshipped Lord Brahma to get his powers. Ravana, he's mentioned as well. So he worshipped Lord Shiva. And Kamsa, who did Kamsa worship? Durga. Remember how he was about to dash what he thought was the eighth child. Actually, the eighth child had already been transferred. He was about to dash the eighth child on the ground, and then the child flew up in the air, eight-armed form. Kamsa met his worshipable deity. So this is the demons. They worship the demigods. Kamas taistairita jnana prabhajante yadevataha. That those whose desires are stolen by illusion, they worship the demigods. So Prabhupada is warning us. Demon doesn't mean ugly features. Your typical ISKCON play, the demon has got all this makeup on and is always looking like this. So Prabhupada explains, actually, they are sometimes very beautiful, aristocratic, educated. In the Bhagavad Gita, it said, Yakshi dasyami modishya. They think, I will sacrifice, I will give in charity, I will rejoice. We know people like that. Some of the leaders of the world, they take credit, they do sacrifice, they perform charity, they become popular. But what's going on behind the scenes? He is my enemy and I will kill him. What's going on behind the scenes? We don't know. In some countries, we don't know. In other countries, they're very open about it. They have, it's said that one of the, I think it's the greatest cause of death in the modern world, outside of, I think, diseases, greatest form of murder is actually governments murdering their own citizens. Because when things go wrong, it happens on a big scale. And it's only after there's a revolution that the bloodshed ends. So we see this is demoniac. But they appear very nice personalities. Oh, educated, aristocratic, beautiful. This is why people vote for them. They're charismatic people. But actually, the demoniac mentality, simply, how much wealth do I have? If you notice the leaders, many of them, they are prime minister for a while or president. Afterwards, what do? You find they have nice jobs. And they are managing directors and companies that have benefited when they were in office. So actually, there's an agenda there. They want to accumulate wealth. And so it's just a job. But they present themselves, oh, I am doing it for the good of the people. So this is the dualistic conception. And then I was thinking, there's another vision we can have for this pastime. And that is, it's very clear, and it's the pastime is pushing us towards understanding one important point. Actually, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, everything is Vasudev. If you look at this pastime, from the beginning to the end, Krishna is involved, and he's incarnating in so many ways. First of all, the idea was Krishna's. The demigods, they go to Kshirodagashaya Vishnu, and he instructs them. Without Krishna's instruction, the demigods, they don't know what to do. So then they try and carry the Mandara mountain with the help of the demons. And what happens? The mountain's too heavy. They can't even carry it. Therefore, Krishna comes and he places the mountain on Garuda. And then he carries the demons and the demigods to the ocean. Then what happens? Well, we have to churn the ocean. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. To churn the ocean, first of all, you need a churning, a rope to churn. So the rope is Vasuki. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it said, Sarpanam asmi Vasukihi. Of snakes, I am Vasuki. So this Vasuki is not an ordinary snake. It's a very powerful, very awe-inspiring snake. Therefore, the chapter 10 of the Bhagavad Gita is Vibhuti Yoga, which means how to see Krishna in nature, how to see Krishna around us, because we're not qualified to see him directly. So one of those opulences is Vasuki. We think of this wonderful snake, then it fills you with awe, and then you think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he is Vasuki. And then when they're churning, well, it's too difficult. It's too difficult, so Krishna comes as Ajit, and he holds one end of the snake. And the demigods, they hold the same side. But then it's still too difficult. Therefore, it's said later on that Krishna, he enters into them all. He enters into the demons in the mode of goodness to empower them. He enters into the demigods in the mode of goodness, the demons in the mode of passion. And he enters into Vasuki in the mode of ignorance. In this way, he's making it all happen. But he's also under the mountain, supporting it as Kurma Rupa. And he's also above the mountain. It's described as a 1,000-armed form that's holding the mountain. So finally, with Krishna above, below, on either side, providing all the materials, finally there's some churning. And then what's produced? Krishna, Dhanvantari, and Mohini Murti, which are, I think, the 12th and 13th scheduled incarnations. So in this way, we should come to the conclusion, actually, we are insignificant and we can't do anything without Krishna. And the demons and the demigods, their vision may be different, but we are seeing it from a greater perspective. We have the benefit of Śrīla Vyāsadeva's Śrīmad Bhāgavatam. Therefore, we can step outside of the drama and we can see, oh, actually, everything is Krishna's arrangement and nothing happens without Krishna. Balam Balavatam Chaham. Krishna says, I am the strength of the strong. So nothing happens. So in this way, we get another vision. And this is the best vision. It's the highest vision. It's the Uttama Adhikari vision. Sarva Bhuteshu Yapashet Bhagavat Bhavam Atmanaha Bhutane Bhagavat Chatman Esho Bhagavatottamaha. The topmost devotee sees Krishna within everything and sees everything within Krishna. In this way, this material world no longer exists as a material world. It's simply an extension of Krishna's lila. Actually, in the discussions between Krishna and Rukmini, there's one verse which explains how this universe is Krishna's lila. So this is a strange thing to say. How can it be lila? It doesn't look like it's very enjoyable. In fact, it looks like it's suffering. And this question is addressed in Jiva Dharma. And the answer is given, well, the question is, well, the Lord is Karuna Maya. He's full of compassion. So why then does he create this material world where we're all suffering? So the answer is given, well, he's also Lila Maya. He's full of Lila. So we should not deny him this Lila of creating this world and placing the rebellious souls here. After all, it's not his fault that we choose to leave him. But then the question is then asked, well, could he not have found a way to bring us back without the suffering? So the answer then is given, well, that is short-term vision. You're seeing your suffering as bad, but actually your suffering is auspicious, because in the long term, through this suffering, you will be corrected, and it's compared to when you heat up metal and you smash it to mold it. Then in order to change our mentality, suffering is required. Suffering is like the heat. The heat will soften the metal, and then the hammer will, with the hammer you can beat the metal and change its shape. So this is what's happening in the mature world. All our suffering is ultimately Krishna's mercy. We may not see it as Krishna's mercy, but that's our short-term vision. So in this way, and it goes on to explain that through this process of correction, we can elevate ourselves from this lowly, marginal position. We remain marginal, but we can actually obtain even the highest love of God, Mahabhav. It's sometimes said that only Radharani experiences Mahabhav. Well, I think there are different types of Mahabhav. There are different types, because even the queens in Dwarka, they experience Mahabhav. Those who are not in the conjugal ras, they don't experience Mahabhav. I think Subal experiences Bhav, which is the eighth stage. There are nine phases of prema, nine stages of prema. Mahabhav is the ninth. The eighth can be experienced by Subal, who's not in conjugal ras, because he is a Priyanarma Sakha. He's a Sakha that is also expert in the conjugal pastimes. So when Krishna goes off at midday, he sneaks off, leaving the cowherd boys. Then he takes a few cowherd friends who then assist him in his pastime with Srimati Radharani. Anyway, that's an aside. Why was I saying this? Oh, yes, because the jivas, through this suffering, which we don't like at the moment, but we should understand that he's given us this free will, which makes us very significant. And with this free will, which is our most precious gift, we're not like inert matter. We have freedom. That freedom allows us to ascend to the highest form of love of God. And therefore, it's worth paying the price of coming to this material world and suffering in order to be corrected, in order to go back to the position of being a pure lover of God. After all, he could have created a situation where we leave him and we just enjoy and we don't suffer, but then we would never turn to Krishna. In order to get the very highest, there must be a deterrent. That is the way. So that is how to understand how this world is suffering. It's actually, it's said in the Brahma Sangita, Ahankaratmakam Vishvam. That this universe enshrines the mundane egoistic principle. That's the only reason for its existence. It is Leela. Well, actually, it's Leela in another sense, because if we consider this pastime, what is actually happening is the demigods and the demons, they are collectively working to serve Kurma Rupa, because he has an itch. And by churning the ocean, that itch is relieved. So actually they are knowingly or unknowingly, probably unknowingly, they are actually serving the Lord. So in that sense, this material world is the Lord's Leela. But it's Ahankaratmakam Vishvam. It is simply the mundane egoistic principle. And this is very apparent in this pastime, because on the one hand, we get the overall picture of how Krishna is doing everything, and it's all Krishna's Leela. But on the other hand, we see how the demons and the demigods, they are in a little bubble of illusion, ahankara, and they're motivated. They're motivated for the nectar. They have personal agenda here. Admendriya Prithivancha, Taribolakam, Krishnendriya Prithicha, Dori Premanam. To act for oneself, that is lust. And to act for Krishna, that is prema. So because they are materialistic, they are motivated for this nectar. That is their lust. And it's all going, and we get to see from our vantage point, we get to see how foolish they are, because they're insignificant, and they can't even churn the ocean without Krishna's help. And Krishna's doing everything for them, but they are wrapped up in a materialistic conception, an egoistic conception, and therefore their service, they're actually, the Lord is mercifully engaging them in service without their knowledge. And they are actually helping to relieve the itch of Kurma. And they will no doubt get spiritual advancement for doing that. So these are some of the considerations. I'll say a little bit more about scientific knowledge, because it's mentioned in the purport how the scientists, they like to oppose the devotees. And the example is given that they say that, well, milk is bad for you, but the cow flesh is very good for you. Therefore, they present the opposite conclusion. And Prabhupada explains that they have a tendency to do the opposite, but it actually benefits no one. We see so many ways. In this pastime, the demons, they thought, well, we want to hold the front of the snake, the mouth, because it's more auspicious. But what happened? This is not an ordinary snake. This is a fire-breathing snake. So they got scorched. So although, actually, Ajita was merciful by taking the front, the demons could not understand that. So that is the nature of the demons. Actually, the Lord is, everything the Lord does is good. It's good for everyone. But the demons, they don't see this. So when the demon suffers, he blames the Lord, or he rejects the Lord, not understanding that this suffering is due to his breaking the laws of Dharma, and that this suffering is ultimately meant to correct the mentality. So we see this all the time. And the modern world, the demoniac mentality is very prevalent. There's an exponential growth in science. If you look at how many scientific papers are produced, I don't know the figures, but I imagine that in this year alone, there'll be more scientific papers produced than probably the whole of the 19th century put together, probably, I'd imagine. There's an exponential growth in knowledge, but it's scientific knowledge and it's truth. Prabhupada says it's partial truth, but it's certainly not the whole truth because of the limits of science. Modern science, because it's restricted to inert matter, which doesn't move, then there's some facility to analyze it and produce laws. But if you try and analyze consciousness through the same method, this is the logical method, then ultimately tarka pratishtanat. Tarka has no foundation, and it is practically impossible to give laws of consciousness, because consciousness is a lot more sophisticated than inert matter. Now, Prabhupada in one purport in Adi Lila, he says a very interesting thing. He says, although matter is limited, still, those scientists who study matter, they become hypnotized by this pursuit. It's referred to as the inductive process of knowledge. And by this inductive process of knowledge, they become enamored and they carry on. Science is addictive. If one is a scientist, I mean, most scientists, their brain works well between 20 and 30, most discoveries. You look at quantum mechanics, it was discovered by scientists in their 20s. Now, if you look at relativity, well, special relativity, Einstein was 25. He was quite old. He was 35 when he discovered general relativity. So there's still some facility. This is, material knowledge has a lifespan. You have to do it when you're young. Spiritual knowledge is different because ultimately it's empowerment. And therefore, even if you're very old, you can become very spiritually advanced. There's no restriction. It's not a material thing. And the good example of this is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who said he couldn't even remember anything. His mind, he was losing his mind due to old age and he was shaking. And yet Krishna or Lord Chaitanya empowered him. And in all this beautiful poetry, Chaitanya Charitamrita is flowing from his hand and he doesn't know what's happening. He's like, where's it all coming from? It said, Bhakcha Bhagavatam Grahyam Nabhujya Na Chatikaya. The Bhagavatam is understood through devotion, not through study, not through intelligence. So devotion is not something that you lose as you grow old, but buddhi, something that you do lose. So it's aham vedmi shuko veti vyaso veti na veti va. Lord Shiva says, I know the Bhagavatam. Shukadev Goswami knows the Bhagavatam. Shula Vyasadev, he may know, he may not know. How is this possible? He's writing the Vedas. He may know, he may not. Because he is simply the channel. He is the medium. And all the knowledge is pouring out of him. Doesn't mean he might, someone else may speak it. Sukadev spoke it. And it said, Shuka Mukha Damrita Drava Samyutam. It became more relishable from hearing from Sukadev Goswami. So this is the nature. It's not a static thing. Bhagavatam knowledge is ever increasing. And although Srila Vyasadeva has presented it, He may know, he may not. He is greater than what he's created because he's empowered. This is sometimes, we see this, sometimes even scientists, they may inadvertently create something greater than what they imagined just by luck. It's possible. So the same with spiritual life. You may present, you may be the medium, you may receive empowerment from the heart, you're inspired, you present something, but then later on, you then reflect upon that and it becomes greater. Wow. Like Srila Prabhupada. He was reading his own books, right? Why are you reading your own books? He said, because I didn't write them. So he's reading them and he's getting more and more out of him, out of these books, even though he's the one that's written them. So that's the nature of spiritual life, ever increasing. So just to complete, just to finish up. So as I was mentioning, the scientists, because they're restricted to studying inert matter, that does not mean that their interest is limited, because it's the nature of this creation that even the limited material creation is unlimited. We see science, how do they progress? You know, they were, first of all, they had the atom, and then they had, well, we have protons, neutrons, electrons. And then it was, well, they're made up of quarks. And then, what are the quarks made up of? Well, we think maybe strings, superstrings, and it just goes on and it never ends. This is the way that Krishna's arranged things, and this is hypnotic. It's not that ultimately you don't get to a dead end. If you want to forget Krishna, then there's perfect facility and it can go on forever. So therefore, some people, they dedicate their life to material science. And by Krishna's arrangement, he keeps them in that illusion and it never ends. So you can take it to the next stage, the next stage, the next stage. And that's only matter. As Lord Brahma said, one may count the snowflakes or the luminaries in the sky, or one may even count the particles in the universe, but one can never count the qualities of the Lord. So we should reflect upon this, that even though this limited realm is infinitely variegated and is very exciting to scientists, still we should understand that this is just a fragment of Krishna's opulences. Yajad vibhuti mat satvam srimadurjitam evava tadad eva vigachatam mama te jongsa sambhavam. Krishna, after explaining all the opulences, he then says to Arjuna, actually, this is just a spark of my splendor. It's not even much, just a tiny bit. Why even bother talking about it? That is the nature. So we should be inspired and think, well, this world is certainly quite amazing. But we should be inspired to think, well, actually, this is simply insignificant compared to the spiritual creation. And then develop a greed. Yes, I want to go there. I want to experience that. But in order to experience it, it's explained by Rupa Goswami. Svalpapi ruchir eva syad bhakti tattva vabodhakaha. You just need a little bit of ruchi, a little bit of taste, and then it will all be revealed. Yuktis tu kevalanaiva yadasya apratishtaha. That yukti or logic has no foundation. You will not understand spiritual science through logic. You can understand material science through logic, but that's because this material world is material. It is the realm that is chincha, or conceivable. It's said in the Mahabharata, a chincha kalo ye bhavana tangstakena yojiyat. Prakrita bhyach param yatscha tada chincha shalakshanam. That the achincha realm cannot be understood through logic. And what is the achincha realm? It is that which is transcendental to prakriti, to material nature. Therefore, our method is perfect. Mahajano yenagadasapanta, follow the Mahajans. And then all will be revealed, because dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam, the truth is within the hearts of the pure devotees. We simply serve the pure devotees and all knowledge will be obtained. Hare Krishna. So any comments or questions?